Of course, I get a lot of questions about CBD products, and thanks to the claims being made, it's hard to tell what's out there. Of course, science has not caught up with the, of course, we've all heard the anecdotes, but the science has not caught up with it yet. But I have connected with an Oregon-based company that's about high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards. They were previously called Select CBD, and now they've relaunched their brand as Social CBD. Social CBD focuses on broad-spectrum oil, something else you might have heard about but might be confusing. So hemp has over 60 non-psychoactive cannabinoids, and CBD is just one of them. Broad-spectrum oil goes beyond CBD isolates and contains additional active compounds that work together to create what's known as the entourage effect. This can more effectively deliver some of the calming effects that people are looking for. Social CBD's broad-spectrum oils contain zero THC, so none of those risks and none of the high you might associate with hemp or cannabis. They're available as great-tasting tinctures and flavors like vanilla mint, pomegranate tea, and Meyer lemon. Simply drop it under your tongue for effect. Social CBD products are available in a range of formulations, each of which clearly described so you can make an informed decision without all the promises that sound and probably are too good to be true. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/socialCBD. That's my website, drdrew.com/SOCIALCBD. And for a limited time, you can save 20% at checkout with the code Dr. Drew, DRDREW. Hey, everybody, welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. As always, remember to keep the winds in the sail of the coral of a pirate ship. And I want to remind you also, we do a daily dose now. It's a streaming show. We're trying to figure out what exact time to do it. Sometimes it's 9 o'clock, sometimes it's noon, sometimes it's 5 p.m. Pacific time, all Pacific times. And we go out on all the streaming sites on Facebook and Twitter and Periscope and Mixer and wherever else you happen to be, YouTube. And I watch the restream of your comments and I take your questions there. Also on Sunday, we're doing a live streaming show at 3 o'clock Pacific time with guests, and that's a call-in show, so I can take live calls for you much like here, but they're live, 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 and again, it's streamed live as well, so check that out. And don't forget, After Dark, there's a new documentary coming out with Robert Paul Champagne. Apparently, he didn't like the interview, but there's a tour coming out of his house, which was extraordinary, and look for that, and thank you for being a part of all this. Speaking of thank you, I want to give a thanks to Dr. Brady Smith. Brady Smith is a Am I getting the name correct?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Nailed it. He's a dentist. He has a website, Drilled with Dr. Brady Smith, Dr. Brady, excuse me, drilledwithdrbrady.com. He is, are you Canadian?
No.
What would make Vancouver, you? Washington. Vancouver, yeah, I saw Vancouver on
You saw the Vancouver.
Yes, and good, okay. Good, we can keep you here.
I thought I had an accent for a second that might have been the case.
No. And also his podcast is Drilled with Dr. Brady, available on Apple Podcasts, anywhere else you get podcasts. And I like your story, but let's back before we actually get to the meat of this. The reason we're here is your buddy Steve-O. You did some work for him, and he said, "Please, please, please, my friend's so cool. Please get him on the podcast." I said, "Fine." And so, what did you do for Steve?
That's very kind. Recently, Steve-O and I collaborated together to give a full mouth makeover to one of his fans.
Oh wow!
And it was a gentleman, kind of a series of the stars aligning to bring every part together. But what it resulted in was taking a gentleman with debilitating dental disease and completely, which was beginning to transform his life very negatively.
Was he an older person?
I would say mid-30s.
Did he have a substance problem that triggered all this?
No. No, I don't believe that that's the case. That's always the question. That's always the go-to, right?
But there's another thing, too, I've noticed, which is when people lose control of their life, it's reflected in their teeth. Like if you go out on the street and see have people smile that are homeless, absent the meth, which is part of the thing out there now.
Right.
But even absent the meth, you see dental disease.
Yeah.
Is that just a function of poor attention?
Oh, you know, it's a chicken or the egg situation, right? It's like, what was it? Was it the poverty that causes the dental disease, or is it the dental disease that causes the poverty? The thing is that I think dental disease affects teeth.
Yeah,
you know, dental disease is doesn't differentiate who you are.
Right.
So, I think it's just a matter of education, being able to value.
But when you can't even find a place to live, or you're doing meth out on the streets, whatever, or you're so psychotic that you can't organize your day and feed yourself, teeth brushing and flossing is not going to be high on the list.
So exactly right. So if you're abusing substances, the last thing you're doing is remembering to brush your teeth at night. That is not, you're exactly right. Yeah. That is not what you are likely prioritizing, let alone the damage that the drugs themselves can do on their own.
Right.
Then you...
And we still don't fully know what that is.
Yeah. Then you compile. There's a lot of studies that are coming out about like pH balance and
acidity.
Acidity is just wreaks havoc on dental disease. People who are bulimic or have eating disorders or GERD, those types of reflux disorders.
As a clinician, I don't think about reflux being a dental problem. Think about it as a vocal problem, but not a tooth problem.
Big dental problem. So absolutely. And those are manifest in the teeth, and it just erodes enamel away, and then your teeth have no protection, and that changes your life.
Mm.
And so that changed the life of a gentleman named Stevie, who is it's Steve-O and Stevie. Very confusing. Got to keep those straight. But Stevie was the gentleman from Wisconsin who we helped out. Great guy. It's so rewarding to be involved in the stories of these people. And I think Steve-O must have felt the same way, because he decided to fly out to our location in Camas, Washington, and be involved. And we kind of surprised. Stevie is kind of a super fan of Steve-O. Mm-hmm. And so he did not know Steve-O was going to physically be there. And there's some revealing of that you can see on our YouTube page, Drilled Podcast YouTube page.
Drilled Podcast YouTube?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Exactly
not Drilled
right.
with Dr. Brady, but Drilled Podcast.
Drilled Podcast is the YouTube page.
Okay.
Exactly right. We want to make it as confusing as we can.
Steve is an example of what I call real complete recovery. And when people are fully recovered the way he is, being of service is part of how they keep sober. And how they make meaning, which is how we should all make meaning. And I understand that's part of your story too, and I want to get into that.
Sure.
But Steve, I'm sure it's effortless for him at this stage of his recovery. It's funny. Very few people go from as bad as he was to full recovery as a straight line. That's almost unheard of.
Like what percent – like if you could put a percentage on it, I'd be curious to know. Is it like 5% or less?
The average is 5 treatments in 4 years. To get one year of sobriety. That's the sort of average with alcoholism.
Wow.
4 treatments in 5 years. It's a long time, and it's multiple treatments. That's average.
Yeah.
Right? So there's better and worse than that, than average. Steve-O obviously better. I've almost never seen the straight line to success. Now, he had a lot of bumps along the way, but he didn't get off the process ever. He stayed with it, which is interesting when he was really using. If you remember, Gary, do you remember the Adam Carolla show on Comedy Central when Steve-O
and
broke
with Adam Carolla? Yeah,
and he broke the table and tipped Adam over and stuff. Well, I was there that night.
Oh.
And we were backstage, and I'm like, hey, man, come on. You're going to have to do something. Come on. And he goes, look, man. You know, he was the way he was back then. Hey, man, look, man.
Hey, dude.
When I do this, I'm going to go all the way. So trust me, if I go, I go all the way. And I went, all right, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
And he was as good as his word. Well, he almost died, of course. But when he went to the mat in one time at the plate.
Right.
Unheard of. Not unheard of, but rare.
My favorite Steve-O story is before that glorious day where he went all the way, when he was on Loveline, I believe, and forgot an ounce of weed at the studio and made you drive him back to get it.
I didn't know that's what I was doing, though.
No, sorry. I did not mean to frame it the wrong way. But yes,
that's what he made me do. With a guy named – what was the guy? A guy in the back seat with neck tattoos with us in the back seat.
Good times.
He had a great name, too, like, you know – Some nickname that was like,
bulldozer.
Yeah, right.
So what's interesting about Steve-O, since he's chronicled his entire life, is that, I mean, definitely determination is his strong suit.
Yeah, that's his
deal. I mean, the guy was determined to from the clown college days until later.
Not letting go. Consistency.
Exactly right. He was going to be the best. And if he was going to do something, he was definitely an all-in type of guy. And I suppose that translates to recovery and sobriety. And
it's an unusual trait to be that complete in your commitment, not just to recovery but to anything else. And most people, their brain gets the better of them and they kind of have to try things their own way and they slip out. It's hard. It's hard work.
Definitely.
And that's normal in terms of – that's why it takes 4 treatments in 5 years, right? People kind of in and out, not prioritizing and stuff. He lived in a sober living for 2 years.
Yeah.
That's unheard of too.
A lot of people are surprised that he's so philanthropic too.
To me, it's just consistent with his recovery. I bet he's effortless.
Yeah, it's just
part of his recovery.
And he was so willing to come be a part. And you know, we when we had been initially discussing like what kind of role he wanted to play, it was his decision to like, hey, I want to be there. Mm-hmm. I want to meet this guy. I want to be part of it.
No surprise.
And I was like, absolutely.
So he's got a new Gary thing going, a webcast that I was, I think, his first guest on. So let's make sure we promote that. Let's see if it's up yet. It's kind of a YouTube thing. That's Steve-O does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I'm looking up right now.
Okay, thank you. So your story. When you got into dentistry, why did you become a dentist?
The first thing that flashes through my eyes is dollar signs.
Path of least resistance. Yeah, it was just something to do.
Always good at math and science.
Right.
So, directionless. No one in my family was in healthcare in any capacity, but good at math and science. That came very easy for me.
There was a ton of people in medical school like that who just like, well, what do you do next? I guess I'll go to medical school.
Right, right. But dentistry, I did have a mentor. I was a member of the Boy Scouts of America, and through that tenure as a Boy Scout, I had a troop leader who was a dentist who was seemingly always available
and cool.
And I just felt like that seems like a good fit for me. I could do that.
Good.
And so I pursued it, and here I am.
And when you got there, my understanding is it wasn't so happy. It didn't make you so happy.
It was actually after – it was about 5 years into being a dentist.
Right.
After they got my $300,000, mm-hmm. and I'm paying on that. So mm-hmm. after I go into tremendous amount of debt,
mm-hmm.
5 years into it, and it wasn't a money thing. I was making good money, but I just felt really unfulfilled, and I felt like my job was hard, and I felt like it
was – Did you
have
dread?
Dreaded it.
Yeah. So I went into medicine with both feet and was working from 5 in the morning to 10 at night.
Jeez.
And the hours and the intensity and the responsibilities and the liabilities and the negativity that was all coming at you, eventually, about 6 to 8 years in, I started having dread too.
Yeah. Well, in dental school, right when I get there, and I went to a very good dental school at University of Pacific in San Francisco. They call you doctor on day one. Very nice. I mean, they're very
formal.
Yes, exactly right. They build you up. But they always were like, you know, you're helping people. You're this pillar of society. People are going to invite you to their daughter's weddings.
Jesus, we never got.
And I'm like,
hey, you're a piece of shit. You're a slave to these. You're here for their good. Nobody else's. They don't care about you, and nor should they.
Exactly right. But in my education, I was built up that this was going to be some amazing thing, and everyone was going to respect me. And I just didn't.
Oh, good. We didn't get it.
Just didn't feel like that when I got out. I felt like no. I'm trying to help people, and they think I'm the cause of their problems, mm-hmm. even though I'm the one trying to fix it,
right.
and they messed it up, and I'm trying to fix it, and I'm now the bad guy.
Right.
So I felt like that, and it became overwhelming. And just like you
generally
said—
Generally in healthcare, how dare you charge them for your services?
Right.
How dare you?
Sure,
that's
sure.
the general note.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So I started feeling a lot of resentment, and dread is the perfect word, because I would see certain people on my schedule days in advance— And for days, it was just like, I just don't want Thursday to come.
Yeah.
Thursday is going to suck. But I started bringing it up to my wife, which caused an issue when I was like, I don't know that this is what I want. Mm. So what that led me to do is
Did
to
you
really
– kids at that point?
Yeah. No. At that point, I had two. I have four now.
Perfect.
So all I want to do is create more mouths to feed. That's
teeth to fix.
That's right. No, great wife, great family. Everything's great there. And, you know, she was supportive in me. So I thought, well, maybe I can change some things about really kind of do a personal inventory of why do I feel this way? And I identified three things. The last one really changed my life, but the first two things was I hated dentures. Specifically, that was one that was very difficult. I probably wasn't very good at doing them, mm-hmm. and it was very difficult to just nail it so patients are happy. Those are procedures that end up with patients coming back weekly for adjustments, mm-hmm. just taking up time, and you really don't charge money. So it's just it's a time suck.
They're unhappy too.
And they're perpetually unhappy.
Yeah,
exactly right. And then I realized also I was working with people I didn't want to work with, but I was the boss.
He had other dentists in there?
No,
or?
No, like hygienists or dental assistants.
Interesting. How'd you end up with people? You just were filling up your...
We had partners and then other people. So collectively as like two or three partners of dentists, we had like so people would hire and fire. And like if I fired someone, I had to hire someone. And, and that responsibility was kind of just kind of delegated to whoever was there. So people could get hired without me knowing about it.
Right.
And also I could hire people myself and not really know how well they are, their job, and how well we're going to mesh personality-wise. So it just became this thing where I was like, no, that's also part of it. I don't want to be around her. I don't like the way she treats me. I feel disrespected. I feel whatever my feelings were is that I can either train this person to be different or I can make a change. And I was very hesitant to make a change. But then I made a change. And the third thing that really helped me out was, and this kind of changed my trajectory incredibly, was charitable service.
Okay, so I want everyone to, this is why we're, you can go to stevo.com or follow at Stevo on Twitter for the updates on his web series.
Perfect.
Stevo.com. It's why really why I'm interested in you telling the story, because there's a ton to be learned from that. A ton.
I think so.
Oh, my God.
I think so.
I mean, just first of all, just a fearless inventory, right? You included in that inventory things you didn't want to acknowledge, like, oh, I don't want to fire this person. I want to get rid of this person. And then you did it.
Correct.
Let's just talk about that change. How did you find the fortitude for that?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm a pretty decent, like I sit down, I'm a thinker. I like to think things through. I think I'm a problem solver naturally. Like my inclination is to solve problems. And
The math.
In a marriage, like this is like the problem in our marriage. The biggest problem is that my wife tells me a problem that she has and I just.
You want to fix
it. She says she needs to hear. That sucks. I'm so sorry.
She just wants you to listen. I get it.
Right.
This is all men, just so you know. You're not alone.
Yeah.
She doesn't want you to solve it.
I don't
she gets pissed
either.
When you try.
But I've learned that my job is to listen. But my inclination is to, well, we got to do this.
Of course.
Well, we got to solve it this way. And I got to call this person. I got to do this. And I'm going to do this. And when we got you covered. I'm going to solve your problem. So that's what I am by nature. So I turned that on myself and I figured out these three things. And slowly over, this wasn't like overnight. I would say this happened over a 4-month period of time that I slowly realized, well, I changed that and I like that. And I changed this and I like that. The denture thing I changed because I talked to a colleague of mine who's like, just drop it, man. Just stop doing them. And I said, well, it's part, I did some calculations. Was this X amount of my income and this is how much I do?
I wonder if you had a feeling that I would have had at that point in my career, which would have been, God, I'm here to help these people, whatever their needs are. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of it. And how do I call myself a good dentist if I'm not? Did you have all that conversation with yourself?
Yeah, well, you know, part of the podcast that I do is very patient facing. And one thing that patients need to understand about dentists is that dentists all day long pick and choose the procedures that they want to do and that they don't want to do. And there's specialists and other individuals that you can farm that out to. So I wasn't really leaving them high and dry because I wasn't doing dentures. I was giving that to someone else.
But I know that feeling of wanting to be the great generalist that can do everything, right?
Jack of all trades.
Yeah,
that's what I wanted to be.
Me too. And so as I dropped things out, it was really hard.
Exactly right.
It was like my identity was being affected by it.
Yeah. That's one of the things I've respected you and your work for so long because you ride the line of entertainment and still keeping it super professional and super above board medically speaking. And that's just super impressive to me. I think that's very difficult to do. But with changing everything, the fortitude to change, the fortitude to actually act.
Yeah. Did you have support or somebody else?
I mean, my wife is super supportive. Yeah. My wife is super supportive. And family, great
family.
Have
you in other times in your life made sweeping change?
Not really.
Okay. So this is a new experience.
No, not like this. And dentistry is not a career that you 180 very easily.
Right, right. Nor is it sort of known for that.
No. Dentists are dentists for life.
Right,
and
right.
And doing a career change as a dentist just is super uncommon.
Yeah.
And so the idea, like, do I know anyone who's done it? No. Do I have anyone to talk to about, hey, how'd that go? No, I would be, that is a dark path with no light and help and guidance.
Anything else in your life that helped you with that? Do you have a spiritual stuff?
I think the saying is that necessity is the mother of invention.
You just problem solving.
I had to solve a problem because I was going crazy and I couldn't.
And you were honest with yourself about it, which is the other thing.
Yeah. So I made those changes. And just in general, dentists don't get trained to run a business. And so there is minimal education in running a business, though most dentists will eventually run a business or they should know the business end of things. But there's zero education in those 4 years and $300,000 of debt that teaches you about that. So you get out and you're like, well, I don't know a whole lot about payroll and hiring and firing. And I never had a class about how to go to someone and say, I don't like, this is what I don't like. Here's how I want it to change. We got to do this, or we got to make a change, and we got to let you go. So just having those hard, awkward conversations, individual face to face with someone that I work with every day to say, I'm going to terminate your employment is a very difficult thing to say. But ultimately it had to be done, and it was done. Mm-hmm. So that helped out a lot. And then that brought me to charitable service.
Yeah, which is another major source of happiness for all humans. Just to define for us what that means for you now.
Oh, so charitable service is just trying to make the most meaningful impact that I can wherever I can, using my skills and talents.
But I understand you do specific things on your podcast.
I do. I do. At first, it started with me before I ever did a podcast. I started doing someone came to me and I can't afford this crown. I can't afford this root canal. I'm in pain. I would say start with small things and just be like, you know what? I got this one. Pay me for the next one. I got you this time. And then I would do bigger and bigger things. And this was just individually. And then I wanted to create an organization or a vehicle where I could do this on a larger scale. And podcasting is awesome because there's no gatekeepers. I can get my message to a lot of people quickly. And ultimately now what we do, every episode of my podcast, we do a $500 giveaway. So
and they have to come to Vancouver to get the.
Yeah, I mean, you got to come to me. Yeah, that's
right.
So we started off with a lot of and we're still at a lot of local listeners, and we do have a way to solve that problem for other people who aren't in our local area. But we give away $500 of free dental work every single week. There's a secret word. In our every week we'd have a secret word, right?
So Pee Wee Herman,
exactly right. That could be a secret word, right? It's just a word that people have to like then email us, and the first person emails that, so they have to listen to the episode.
Got it.
So then every 6 months now we roll out a full top to bottom makeover on dental makeover, and we are looking for people who are whose lives have been negatively impacted because of their dental condition. And our only rule every 6 months is that you cannot nominate yourself.
And how much would that have those generally cost if you were to pay for it?
They start at around $30,000. So these $30,000 cases, and it can be as much as $70,000 to $80,000 cases.
And you're doing implants and the whole
everything.
Thing? Everything.
So, yeah. So me wanting to be a jack of all trades, I've trained myself in most dental disciplines.
What implant technique do you use? Different ones?
How do you mean?
Aren't there different sort of techniques for it?
There's different brands. There's different techniques. It's drilling a hole. You're drilling. It's like carpentry. Essentially, that's a very crude way of.
No, I know. That's what people don't understand. When I first got into orthopedics, I was noticing, oh my God, this is just carpentry. People think it's some sort of micro. No. It's a hammer and a chisel.
It's a screw. Yeah. I mean, all you're doing is. And implants are just you're drilling holes and then putting screws in holes.
Yeah.
And you're putting them in very strategic locations for whatever application you want to make of that. So very expensive dental work. We have a lot of people helping us out. We have implant companies. The one that we use is called Implant Direct, and they help us out by giving us free supplies. We have local labs that help us out and do lab work for free for us.
Nice.
And the beautiful thing about this and what we've kind of begun to create is that we've just gotten very little roadblocks. When I call up a company, a lab, and say, hey, this is what I'm doing, can you help us out? Absolutely, 100%. Very few people, no, I don't want to, can't do it.
Yeah, I
can't
think people want to be a part of the solution.
And that's it. People want to. People want to do it. And I believe dentists want to do it.
Yeah, everybody does.
And I believe that, so what we've done here every 6 months, it's not just me. The first people I recruited were my dental partners. So I got two people right in the Vancouver, Washington area, two other people besides myself. So that enabled us to choose three people every 6 months. And then the last one we just rolled out, we got a dentist in Baltimore, Maryland. We got a dentist in Monterey, California. We got one in Seattle, Washington.
Where should people, if dentists are listening to this and want to be a part of your network, where do you want us to go?
Email me, drilledpodcast@gmail.com.
Drilledpodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Lost my train of thought. I had a great question. aging brain gone. Completely well, gone. We were till that happens to you.
You know, we were talking about the
the implants and things.
The implants and how much money that comes up
I know what that's I know what I was going to say. Go ahead. I've been involved with doing a lot of daytime television stuff over the years. We would occasionally do these mouth rebuilds as, you know, sort of a story that they that the TV would then cover, or how, and how they did it, but they did it. A lot of these people had more problems when we came back around a year later.
They might,
and so how do we make sure they take care of what anyone of my being done?
It's a great question, because they've obviously gotten there for a reason. There's that can't be ignored. That something's got them to. There's a lot of counseling that I do as a dentist too, not like therapy or anything like that, but just here's what causes this. Here's what you need to avoid. Here's the lifestyle changes you might need to make sure things are good. And then anyone who wins these rollouts, these makeovers, they get free cleanings and checkups forever.
Oh.
I'll never charge them again.
So that's hopefully they show up.
So we try to remove all barriers specifically to solve that problem.
Right.
Whereas I never want them to not come in because they don't have $60 or $80 for a cleaning or something like that. No, we try to get them to come in.
And if we were to point at the thing that was the most, if you can, most – I don't want to say challenging, but more threatening to their mouth. Is it not coming in for cleanings? Is it not doing flossing? Is it not brushing? Is it all the above? How do you?
Yeah.
If somebody's going to do one of these things, which one should they do?
Yeah. The core of that question is going to be neglect. Neglect, I think, is the number. I mean, it all boils down to something happened first. You didn't catch six teeth that fell out all at once. One fell out first.
Mm-hmm.
There's a domino.
And you ignored it.
And you didn't do anything. You thought it's one tooth. Who cares? Maybe you had a bad experience with a dentist. Maybe some dentist rubbed you the wrong way. That happens a lot. Maybe you're scared.
A lot of fear.
Yeah, maybe you're very apprehensive. You have a real anxiety and you're phobic of dental experiences, and so that keeps you away. And if it doesn't hurt, then we don't go in. So that's a matter of educating and just trying your best. And the dental profession's been failing at that since its inception, right? We do not. There is a huge – and this is – one of the issues I have with dentistry profession where it's going is that it's a huge problem that this portion of the population is becoming more and more neglected, not more and more taken care of.
And how do we characterize this portion?
Lower socioeconomic demographics.
Got it. And Adam always quips that dentistry hasn't had any major technological advances in the last many, many years. He jokes about it all the time.
But yeah.
he looks at it, it's still a drill and it's still a drill in a hole. And it's,
sure.
And how come you can't make more advances?
You know, maybe Adam hasn't been to the dentist in a long time.
No, he went. He needed a lot of work.
Okay.
Speaking of neglect.
He goes quite a bit. I think
now
he does
because it's all he's catching up for 20 years of neglect.
I think we'd all hear a lot less out of Adam if his dentist would just install the inline water heater on the water gun so it's not ice cold.
Oh, he hates the cold water.
He hates the cold water. And totally. Then when he points out that there's a thing that, you know, that he hates it, the dentist inevitably goes, well, there's a thing I could get. I just don't.
Yeah. He always is affirmative that there's something there, but sorry, not me.
I think the last 10 years in technological breakthroughs in the dental industry, if we really want to bore your audience, we can talk more about this, but it has made huge strides. There's tons of gadgets.
Look at this.
Oh, check that out.
These things are amazing.
Yeah. You got.
So I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get your clear liners.
Yeah. So
cool.
I've had braces twice in my life. And the reason I got into it as an adult is I had some broken teeth up front, and lo and behold, now I'm getting veneers, and somebody says you got to straighten it, blah 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 blah. So I'm into this thing, but I couldn't wear braces. I was on television, but I just couldn't do it.
I think you could pull it off.
Well, but back then all they had was I needed a lot of space up top.
Sure,
too.
Sure.
And the only thing they had was blur retainers, so pushing it forward from behind.
Yeah.
Back then, that was like 15 years ago or something.
Sure.
And I dutifully wore retainers ever since, you know, and it was adequate. I don't care, you know, whatever. And then I broke my retainer. And so I went back to the guy that did the work, and he's like, you know, there's a lot more to be done. Back then you said you wouldn't wear braces. You ought to try this.
Yeah.
And it's been crazy effective.
I mean, that's a great example of technological breakthrough.
Yeah.
Clear aligners are one of only two procedures in dentistry that have seen double-digit growth in the United States.
They put a computer over your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you, you know, they figure out where they want to go and they go.
Yeah.
That's it. And these things are, you don't feel a damn thing.
No. A little tight maybe at first, but after a day or two,
nothing. It's nothing.
It's nothing.
It's a zero.
No. And so it allows a lot more people to get into orthodontic treatment. little tiny things you wanted to fix that you didn't, you know, people who didn't want to wear braces previously now don't have to.
Are there things you can't do with these?
Yes, there are limitations to clear aligners. And
we're talking about like Invisalign, things like that.
Invisalign, exactly right. And then the real controversial issue right now in the dental community is the Smile Direct Club, the do-it-yourself.
Yeah.
They send them to your house now without the
dentist.
Observation or
the computer setup.
Or it's different.
They just do pictures,
they
I guess.
Send you molds and you can take your own impressions and you send it back to them. And then they do scan it once they get it back to their facility.
Yeah.
And so that has dentists real upset because their IPO just came out and then their stock kind of tanked and there's these huge class action lawsuits against the company.
Why?
Just simply because it's dentistry. Their claim is that it's not dentistry. They're not performing dentistry. So therefore they don't have to have a licensed individual. Oh. They aren't required to. Mm. And then the dental community in general is saying that's dentistry. Mm. You're moving teeth, which actually usually requires the supervision of an orthodontist who goes to school for 2 years beyond dental school.
Your enzymes are, of course, these are chemicals that improve digestion or allow for digestion. Let's put it that way. Rand research shows that by the time someone hits 65, their saliva and pancreatic secretions, both of which are involved in enzymatic activity, have declined by as much as 50%. This can create issues with digestion, and you might consider enzyme supplementation. And the best enzyme I have found comes from bioptimizers called Massozymes. Massozyme is the most complete, most potent digestive enzyme with over 102% more protease than the nearest competitor and 300 to 500% more per serving than the most popular brands. Crucial because protein is one of the most complex macronutrients and has to be broken down to be digested. Massozyme not only contains more protease, it contains 13 additional enzymes, including lipase for fat digestion. And it works at every pH level from 2 to 12, in other words, at every stage of digestion. All this makes Massozymes an ideal complement to any health and meal plan. You can watch Massozymes dissolve raw steak. Go to Massozymes.com/Drew. That is just like it sounds, Massozymes.com/DREW. And try it today risk-free. Their 365-day full money-back guarantee is the gold standard. If you don't feel how Massozymes help you upgrade your digestion and power through your food, their support team will give you a no-questions-asked refund. Finally, when you go to Massozymes.com/Drew, be sure to enter the coupon code DrDrew10 to get a 10% discount off your order. It's a deal that is a limited time only while quantities last. If you like my show, you're going to like Showmance with Kevin McHale and Jenna Ushkowitz on Podcast One. Join the former Glee star and best friends as they interview other dynamic duos about the wild ups and downs of balancing a relationship on set. Download new episodes of Showmance with Kevin McHale and Jenna Ushkowitz every week on Podcast One.
So now as a patient, and I try to be a dutiful patient. I don't ask questions beyond the routine. But it kind of occurred to me, it's like, that's pretty simple. Why do the orthodontists have to check me every 4 weeks? What's going to go wrong?
Yeah. You know, I don't want to get a lot of hate mail from dentists, but I
– And by the way, he's not charging me every time. It's sort of wasting his time.
No, exactly right. I think it's best to be supervised by a dentist or an orthodontist if you're going through any kind of clear aligner system. But – the truth is, Smile Direct Club does billions of dollars of business. They've had hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of customers
that are happy.
Exactly.
Yeah, and to get at that lower socioeconomic group, this is a way to do it.
Yeah.
Right?
So they come in just to give you some price examples. They might charge you $1,800. Mm-hmm. You go to an orthodontist at $6,000. Our society is not going to accept $6,000 when $2,000 is on the table for the same thing.
For even something close, they will take that price differential.
Exactly right. And all I got to do is not see the dentist. Well, I don't want to see the dentist anyways. Right. Imagine you're Adam. I mean, Adam doesn't want to see the dentist anyways. So
but I'm imagining if you're – again, we're going for the lowest socioeconomic brackets. Mm-hmm. They may have other chronic dental issues that if you're now straightening the teeth, can't you really screw things up?
Yeah. So that was the problem they got in trouble for. They make you sign – if you're the patient, you have to sign something that says, I have seen a dentist and have been cleared of all periodontal pathology and problems. But a dentist doesn't need to sign that. The patient just needs to say, I saw someone.
But to be fair, that's on the patient then. That's just on the patient.
Exactly right.
And
but then the question
that's
then –
that's what makes a market.
The question in the courts is going to be – is the patient fully capable of making that informed decision?
These days, it goes on the side of the patient.
Yeah. Well, you might be right. Yeah. I don't know. I like to just get my popcorn and watch this from the sidelines. So.
Oh, and I like being a good patient. So I just do what I'm told.
Yeah.
And I know the difference. You know, one of the things that people miss about any kind of healthcare is judgment and supervision. Those are two things that they don't factor into their Google searches.
Right.
You know what I mean? That you have thousands of hours of judgment that helps you look at things above and beyond just the facts of the case. Like, sure. How does it feel right to me, or the context of this, something's bothering me?
Mm-hmm.
Those sorts of experiences are extremely important in clinical care.
Right.
And you only really encounter those sorts of feelings if you're on top of your patients.
Yeah.
When you see them regularly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And whatever regular is sort of that certainly can be, you know, we can discuss that. But
yeah.
It's at least being diligent. And diligence is not in anybody's healthcare models.
No, you're absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, so absolutely
the
right.
The relationship, the judgment, and the diligence, the only things that really make healthcare, no,
yeah.
Can't deal with that. No, well, factor.
And you know, part of this whole thing is that, you know, I don't know if – have you ever heard how many – what percentage of emergency rooms in the United States are dental related? What percentage of emergency room visits are dental related? And it's anywhere – on the low end, I've heard 5%. On the high end, I've heard 25%. And I talk to colleagues of mine who are ER docs. I'm sure you have colleagues who are ER docs. It's always interesting to speak to them about how much dental is mucking up the system, because an ER doc, literally, they can't pull your tooth. They can repair your gunshot wound,
right,
or your stab wound,
yeah,
but they cannot pull the tooth, right, out. That is beyond the scope of their practice.
Well, and infection and gum infection,
mm-hmm,
implicated in heart disease, somebody absolutely comes in septic.
Exactly, right.
People on immunosuppressive medicines, gum disease makes a much bigger impact.
Yeah.
And you know, hard to tell what's going on even sometimes.
But that's kind of some evidence of accessibility or the lack of accessibility, right? Because if you had – the question's always, why aren't they calling a dentist? It must – to them, it must not be accessible, or they must perceive it to be inaccessible. And so they don't.
I can tell you, having seen terrible jaw injuries and facial injuries and stuff like that, the dentist is like, one day we'll get them there. Not now. I don't even know if there's a specific recommendation for what one day is.
Yeah. So,
and by the way, sometimes they're calling maxillofacial guys that are dentists, to be fair.
What are you saying?
Maxillofacial guys that are dentists. Most ERs have access to that.
Most do, but most of these people don't need that. Most people just need a tooth pulled.
That's right.
Right?
That's,
they just enough. They just need a tooth pulled, and they're just crazy in pain, and they're just going to where my body hurts, and that's I'm going to the hospital.
Got it.
But they, you know, they can go to an ER and they wait however long they have to wait in the waiting room.
To be told nothing.
They get maybe some amoxicillin, some penicillin, or and they get maybe some Percocet or some Vicodin.
We're good with that.
And then they get thrown out and they say, call a dentist.
Did you get wrapped into the opiate thing where your peers were overprescribing?
Oh, I think I think dentists are on the front lines.
I know that.
Did you get
wrapped into it? Because there was so much pressure to prescribe opiates that people well-meaning people were overprescribing.
By the time that I got in there, into dentistry, it was just everyone I knew was like, oh, this is what you do.
You prescribe this. I know.
I was like, oh, okay, I prescribe this.
Yeah.
So even in dental school,
yeah,
you pull a tooth, you prescribe Vicodin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I learned. And so that's what I did.
The 60, 30, 90, 10.
How many?
What was your practice then?
Yeah. So I usually give away,
Back then.
5 milligrams hydrocodone. It's 5 325s.
Five tablets.
No, 5 milligram tablets, 325 of acetaminophen, and I give them 16 tablets.
Okay, that's not bad.
So I give them – it's basically a four-day supply.
Yeah, no, that's not bad. That's still very appropriate.
No, we don't do these huge management contracts of like 200 opioids.
I would see routinely 30 or 60 being done by dentists and everybody else.
I do see dentistry. That.
Yeah.
For sure.
And what a mess. And when I would try to address it, literally I had sent one patient in that was an opiate addict and and I said, you tell the dentist, you're an opiate addict, you can't take an opiate. The dentist said, thank you very much, appreciate it. Told me, here, take this. Give him Tolman, which is an opiate. And so people aren't even aware what opiates are.
Yeah. But this is a problem. One of the problems that you see in like real day, everyday practice with a dentist is like, if I pull this person's tooth out and I don't give them Percocet because they want it.
Oh, you'll be in trouble.
Then, back then. Right, yeah.
Back then, major trouble.
I'll get a Google review. I'll upset them. They'll file a board complaint against me.
Yep.
They'll tell all their friends not to come.
And back then, you would have actually been in potentially criminally liable for.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, and there were several cases.
Are you serious?
Criminal liability for abuse. They put it. They got through. They were able to successfully prosecute elder abuse for Now that doesn't cover by your malpractice. That's a criminal and civil problem, not malpractice.
So because lack of pain management essentially
you've
is
what abused your patient.
Oh man,
for not giving them 30.
No, so I've never ever had to deal with that.
No, I know that's now swung the other way where we can't get anybody anything. At least in California, it's hard to get anybody what they need.
Yeah, so
which
now
is very different.
No, my only concern was always. My business will suffer. They won't refer patients. They won't refer their friends and family to me.
Right.
And
you didn't want to be back. I can remember early on being just. I'm laughing because I don't care. Really, really preoccupied with my reputation,
mm-hmm.
like as a professional.
I
wanted to be beyond reproach. Just on Johnny on the spot with the best possible all the time.
Yeah.
And anything short of that was shattering to me. It really was difficult early on.
Yeah, and now that I'm so I'm no Dr. Drew, but I am putting myself out there, and I'm realizing that I'm kind of in the infancy stages of like what it's like to put yourself out there.
It'll and get used to it.
I don't run a clinical podcast. It's not clinical. There's tons of dental podcasts.
Yeah.
That are how to double your production and
get 100
new patients these five steps.
You're patient oriented.
Yeah, and so I want to give patients good advice. I want to get patients, hey, here's how you arm yourself. If you're going to go to the dentist, here's some good ideas. Here's some things you should know. If a dentist is telling you this, is this real? Is this not real? What about your situation? Is that, how can I help patients understand and kind of demystify dentistry even a little bit? Dentistry itself is, you might have four teeth in your mouth that have been root canaled, and you still have no idea what a root canal is.
Mm.
Tons of people fall into that category if they just literally... I just do what I'm told. I had to open. I opened for 2 hours and I left and I got this bill. That's what they really remember is how much it cost them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to kind of open. That's what we do with the podcast in addition to having it be this vehicle to give away.
These aren't conceptually difficult phenomena.
No.
The procedures.
No.
Technically difficult, but not as a concept. Pretty easy people understand them.
I think so. I mean, yeah. So, like implants are digging a hole.
Yeah.
You're just digging a hole and throwing a screw in. I mean, so I like to explain things like that, try to be as transparent as possible.
Why would you do an onlay versus an inlay?
It's great. Yeah. So then you get, is it okay? Is it best to conserve enamel or is it best to get something that covers more of the tooth?
How do you decide?
You're going to have different dentists that feel very differently. You have definitely dentists in two different camps here of the enamel conservationists and those who just, I want something that's going to fully cover the tooth.
I feel like as I've gotten older, they've been more into covering. Is that because I'm older or is that the way the field is going?
I am more inclined towards that.
Yeah. Is that because the porcelains are better and stuff? Technically, they're more durable?
Yeah. And we use a ceramic.
There's
a really popular ceramic called zirconia, which is very commonly used. Very similar to porcelain as far as the way it looks, but it's just the sheer strength is way better. And so people use that on posterior teeth.
So I have a mouthful of stuff. Look.
Yeah.
Ah.
Oh, check that out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Some of it goes back to childhood.
You got inlays and onlays.
Yeah.
And you got some gold back there.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of gold.
Yeah.
Gold is awesome.
And so the dentist always says, do you want to put porcelain? I'm like, I don't care. What's going to last longer?
Yeah.
And they sort of go towards gold.
Yeah.
And
I had an instructor who in dental school who was a big Cincinnati Bengals fan. And he was a prosthodontist who made his own, did his own ceramic work. Coolest dude. He drew on the crown like stained the crown black and orange, black with orange stripes.
Oh, that's funny.
Just like the Cincinnati Bengals. So he had
hysterical.
This big fat molar, and I was like, oh man, you could market that.
Oh, these days are bad.
Yeah, people get their favorite football team on their tooth, favorite color or favorite
G there for Green Bay.
Exactly right. So, exactly right.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little cosmetic dentistry for a second.
Okay.
I'm always confused about what to do with whitening.
Okay.
Because people are like crazy with that these days, right? Am I right about that?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And people's teeth are like generally whiter than they're supposed to be. They're
off
not
the
they're,
charts.
They're not the ivory color. They are this color that Adam Carolla's name is white.
Into unnatural colors
but
of white.
But that's becoming – people are getting used to seeing that. It's almost becoming normative on TV and things, which I've noticed lately. It's gotten really weird.
Yeah.
So A, is that okay? B, are there dangerous ways to do that versus safe ways? Are there expensive versus inexpensive?
Yeah, your body has natural defense mechanisms in place. So if you're whitening your teeth too much, your teeth are going to hurt you. Which
right.
is what, you know, they're going to become super sensitive.
Yeah. Whether but then you can put the Sensodyne on there, and it kind of goes away.
Keep going.
And keep
right?
going. Right. People do that.
Yeah. And if you run
but
out
that's with the hydrogen peroxide stuff, right?
Exactly right.
But what about there's these lasers and things? I don't know what even they are that people use to whitening machines.
Okay. So there are a ton of gimmicks.
Yeah.
Because of how marketable. Exactly what you're saying, how marketable tooth whitening is.
Yeah.
So you got every single toothpaste company has their whitening
right, what
toothpaste.
Was that? Yeah.
But
these machines, because patients were asking me about machines, you know, when you go in there for $225, mm-hmm. we will whiten your teeth like you've never seen before.
Yeah.
What is that? And does that last a week or does it last a month or is it, what is that?
The only ingredient that I know, the only chemical or ingredient or gel based
peroxide.
Is hydrogen peroxide. Yeah, right. That is the only thing. That we know, backed by scientific literature, that will whiten your teeth.
Yeah.
And only your original untouched enamel. If your teeth are covered with filling material or porcelain or ceramic of any kind, they won't whiten.
Yeah. Anything you put on your teeth.
It has to be your natural enamel.
Right.
And even then, not everybody's teeth are going to whiten.
Oh,
it's not something that – I think the last thing I heard or read was about – it's about 80% – about 20% of people will – never experience any kind of effect using whitening agents.
Mm, that's interesting.
So you have things like charcoal toothpaste. That's a big one, right? So charcoal toothpaste is this black, dark black
scrub,
abrasive.
It's really getting my teeth white. See,
yeah.
Look.
Yeah. Now you might be scraping some stain or possibly even tooth structure off your teeth.
Jesus.
And so you get the perception. Then when you wipe the black off, your teeth just look so white. So yeah, I think that's a trick.
Compared to the black.
Someone came up with a really good trick.
All right. Good.
And now I have patients who say, no. It worked for me.
Yeah.
And I want to say, okay. If you say
but
so.
But you don't know of any risk with that.
It's any abrasive.
Any risk with peroxide?
Sensitivity.
That's it. So people can use it for years and years, no harmful effect.
On your teeth.
Yeah.
Hydrogen peroxide can cause quite the nasty chemical burn if it touches your gum tissue, which is why usually if you go in like an in-house office, like a one-time bleaching thing, they put some kind of dam over your gum tissue to protect your gum tissue because of the high concentration of hydrogen peroxide.
Are they using a lighter or laser or something to push the peroxide in? Or what is it? It looks like they had a machine they put people in.
Yeah, the lasers.
Yeah.
I think the laser's a gimmick. I don't think the laser does anything.
Wow.
I don't think you're doing anything with lasers. That's not – they say the laser activates the gel.
Mm.
So you put this gel on the teeth. Lasers activate it.
Are they maybe just using a high concentration gel?
They're definitely
28% or something.
Higher than that.
Oh,
it's like up into it's up into mid 30s.
Oh,
I think.
Well, that will whiten your teeth in 4 hours.
Right,
yeah.
with or without a light.
Yeah.
So
how come that's not commercially available?
I am in the camp
because of the gum.
It's dangerous.
The gum stuff.
So you can get Crest white strips over the counter.
Yeah,
and the difference is the reason why that doesn't burn your gums is because the concentration of the chemical is far less.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the FDA probably controls what percentage they can use
over the counter.
If you're buying the stuff from Target or Walmart.
Right. That is interesting.
Yeah.
See, I don't think anybody knows that. Everything you just described to me was a mystery.
Yeah.
Because
well,
there's so much marketing,
yes.
and so much stuff, and so much confusion out there.
Yeah.
This.
And whitening toothpaste probably don't work either because the concentration – listen, all they got to do is put a drop of hydrogen peroxide in the toothpaste. Now it's a whitening toothpaste.
Yeah.
So the idea is that I have never met a single soul who has whitened their teeth with a toothpaste only.
So
I don't know anyone who's that's actually happened to.
So if somebody's going to do this, they've got to essentially go get trays,
mm-hmm.
get the gel,
yeah.
put it on every so often.
Yeah.
And that's that.
And you can find, I mean, dentists are always giving away deals like free whitening with something or buy one, get one free. Or we do, in my office, we do $99 trays with whitening. It's $99 for life deal. It's like you buy the trays from us and I'll just give you bleach whenever you want it.
Oh, wow.
So it's just like forever. You come in and I'll give you bleach.
Crazy.
So it's more like, you know, it's a
way of getting you in.
Yeah, it's just a way of getting you in. Exactly right.
So. Yeah. Okay. You've said, as Stern would say, you've said it all. You've said it all. Have we missed anything? Is there any other topics you want to get into?
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, I just, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to come in and for you to let me come on your podcast and chat about this stuff. We really have some ambitious goals to create a network that will be the most impactful charity that could ever possibly exist.
I gave a lecture. Now, I can't remember the name of this organization. It was in San Francisco, and it was a cosmetic dentistry coalition that sort of gave awards. It gave sort of medals of status to people, like gold medal and whatever.
Oh, dentists love to do that to each other.
Okay. And this group, you in order to get these – what would they call them? These sort of status acknowledgements.
Yeah.
You'd have to do stuff for free for people and mouths and things. And that's how they would get their patients for free. And they couldn't charge for the work that got them to their acknowledgements, whatever they were. It was usually one big case or something. Mm-hmm. And they're judged on how good the case was and stuff. But you might look into that group because they could be a good
– I wonder if they do that because – you wouldn't want someone to not get those acknowledgments because their patients had a lack of access to financial means.
That and the idea was also it's like you can charge for it after you get the award. You know what I mean? Then you have the status.
Then
to
you
go
can charge everyone you want. Right. Exactly right. I always hope that it's always done in the true nature of charitable service, which
they seem like it. They really did. And there's another thing. The lecture – this is another interesting topic for us. The lecture I was giving was on body dysmorphia. And what a lot of people don't know, originally body dysmorphia was a dysfunction of perception of the face.
Okay.
And teeth and mouth were a big part of the manifestations of body dysmorphia.
Mm-hmm.
And so people can come in – I don't know if you experienced this. I'm getting into it because I have OCD with these retainers. With the tiniest little – just the littlest adjustments will drive them crazy.
Yeah.
And you barely even see it. You're like, okay, well, we can do it. But and people with dysmorphia, apparently those temporal regions of the brain that fire off and make it difficult for people with this disorder to see the whole, they can only see the tiniest little problems that they're looking at. And they focus on skin. They focus on teeth. They focus on hair. And do you encounter much of that stuff?
All the time.
Yeah.
Constantly. It's one of the reasons why – every single story that we tell of these people that we – the very first person that we gave a giveaway to, fantastic woman. Her name was Bobby. She was nominated by her daughter. She was on the verge of becoming a recluse.
People do that. They isolate because of their mouth.
Isolate.
Yeah.
They're dropping
shame.
Friends are dropping off the planet.
Yep.
Family can't come over anymore.
Yep.
Borderline hoarding situations, and this changes when we change their teeth.
Yep, I've seen that.
And it's the whole reason why we do what we do is because when I first started doing this, and I could do free dental work for someone, even when it was costing me money, I get the materials donated now. But before I did not, it still didn't move the needle for me. Mm. My income was pretty much the exact same, whether I did a free big case or not. But for the individual who is the recipient of that,
their whole life's changed.
It moves the needle.
Oh my God!
In the most incredible way, and so I feel like, wow, I have this skill and this talent, and now, I feel like to withhold that, it's almost a compulsion for me.
I would say it's unusual for you to be as young as you are at this stage of your career have acknowledged this, to understood this.
Okay.
It's common for practitioners later to start to really get into this sort of feeling about things. So it's great that you're on it.
Thank you.
And Aristotle wrote about it. He said that the meaning of life for humanity was something he called eudaimonia or eudaimonic happiness. And we got screwed up in this country defining what we mean by happiness. He didn't mean euphoria. He didn't mean hedonic happiness. He meant well-being, nourished, purposeful, good life. That was eudaimonic happiness. And so people are kind of getting that these days a little bit. But there's a piece they always leave out. And you mentioned it front and center. Which is that he always said – what Aristotle said was in order to really be of service meaningfully in a eudaimonic life, you have to have skill and wisdom. And people don't develop – they don't necessarily have that. They may have something they can give back, but you have to give back with some really a skill that makes a difference and wisdom about it and whatever. So skill and wisdom, people go, no, I want to make a difference. I want to give back. Well, what are you going to do? You can go you go to the soup kitchen. You can ladle soup. That's not really what we're talking about here. How about you go develop a skill that you can then go do service for people?
Exactly right.
And people miss that piece.
And I didn't know when I became a dentist that this skill was going to be such a life changer for individuals. And I don't think individuals who lose their teeth understand how the importance of that until it's gone, and then it's gone. And then they go to a dentist and they're told $25,000. Well, you might as well say $25 million for a lot of these people, because it's just never, they don't make $25,000 in a year.
Yeah, not gonna happen.
It's just never gonna happen. And even denture, and then you add anxiety on top of that.
Oh, when you rebuilt Jessa Reed's mouth too.
Yeah, we did some things. Well,
how did she find out about you?
That's a funny story. So the way that I got hooked up with Jessa was, she was on Bert Kreischer's podcast.
Okay.
Bertcast.
And look, she's got the Mormon and the Meth Addict or something.
And the Meth Head podcast. Yeah. And she has a podcast called Soberish as well.
And she was on After Dark. You can see it there, Gary.
Yeah. And she's been on your program as well. Yeah. That's right.
She's a trip.
Episode 28 of After Dark.
Thank you.
Yeah. So she is a trip.
Bertcast 296.
What's that?
Bertcast 296.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the one that you heard.
Kreischer.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the very top of his episode, which I watch on YouTube. Big fan of comedy, big fan of Bert.
I gotta get on his podcast. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and so he, they were starting off, and on film she turned around and put her teeth in and glued them in. Her glue wasn't that good. She's about to have a long conversation with Bert, and doesn't want her teeth to fall out. So she turns around, and Bert's just like, "What the hell is going on?" And I knew someone, so I do a lot of free work for stand up comics. Like local stand-up comics in my area, and I knew a stand-up comic who knew Jessa. Hmm. And so I said, hey, if she'll come on the podcast, tell her I'll do her implants for free. And she came on the podcast.
That was that.
And that was it. So we did four implants up top. And so she has this cool little mechanism that she had these dentures already, and then they snap right in. And so now her teeth don't move, and you can put porcelain teeth into these denture
you would
pieces.
Never know that she was
they look amazing. Yeah. And it was it's always a journey, these types of cases. It's not overnight. These implants have to integrate into your bone, and that can take some time. Mm-hmm. And so you got to wait for it to happen, and then it can take 3 or 4 months, and then you start snapping things into place and things work out. But she's been incredible, that's how we kind of got.
What I like about this podcast today is that I hope I articulate this without diminishing what we've discussed, which is that this is not about dentistry, right? It is on the surface.
It has that part. But
it's about humans and service and about meaning.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
And that I knew this was going to be about that. That's what I hope people take away from the conversation.
And thank you, because one of the crucial messages that I want to send to my colleagues, my dental colleagues, is the importance of charitable service, because I think collectively as a profession, we do not do it enough, not in a meaningful way. Sometimes they'll have a day of free dentistry where you'll do a cleaning, filling, maybe pull a tooth for someone, and that's it. But we're not really taking these people and impacting their lives.
Right.
That's very nice to do those types of free dental days. But it's not as impactful as we could be. Imagine if every single dentist in the United States took one person under their wing, and that is ultimately what drives our ambition in this podcast. And we are actually a nonprofit organization. We filed for a 501c3, and so that's happened, and we're super excited to try to build this into what I think it can truly become.
And let me share with you the from the medicine perspective, what we do is when we do these things, we also teach.
Mm-hmm.
So you could also turn them into teaching opportunities and things too. So you integrate the free service and the teaching.
Yeah. So and all dentists want to know about the clinical stuff, like, hey, how'd you do that? What'd you do in this type of case? Yeah. How'd this patient present? What were the indications and what do you end up doing? So they want to know the clinical stuff too. But what I want them to know is, listen, you can turn your life around.
Yeah.
You can enjoy your job.
Oh yeah.
You can look forward. You know, instead of in the top of the program here, I mentioned how I would dread for days these patients coming in. But when I had free patients coming in, when I had patients that I knew I was doing free work for, I would look forward to that for 3 days.
Nice.
I'd want them to come in as soon. I would loved going to work when they are going to be there. So we want to build a podcast that gives people true value in listening and participating.
And that is Drilled with Dr. Brady. The website is drilledwithdrbrady.com, BRADY, and youtube.com/drilledpodcast. And check it out, man. Good to see you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
This has been a pleasure.
Good. See you next time.
for call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.